on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Today's the day.
Here's John Williams.
Lots of fancy folks around the radio station today, I'll tell you that. It was a reunion. What fun we had today at WGN.
Lord have mercy.
This is John Williams. We're here all the way until 3 o'clock. Thanks for joining us, and feel free to call or text in along the way. On the one.
Make your decision about healthcare until you saw the bill and it just came out.
And what we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
the
act
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last time you did the same thing. You were
sorry. Yes.
You last time did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
It's 1:12, so we'll visit with the editor of one of the newspapers that has rescinded its endorsement of the candidate who body slammed. Not since Jesse Ventura ran for governor of Minnesota has body slammed been more of a political conversation. But there it is. You body slammed me. And so that guy's lost the endorsement. Here's the funny fact, though, that Steve Bertrand pointed out to me, that if you're following this story, it is the case of the special election in Montana. They have one congressman and two senators. It would be one of the few states, maybe the only state? There must be others.
No, there are a few.
Where you have more representation in the United States Senate than in the Congress.
I think Wyoming has one, just one House member.
So this is their guy.
South Dakota.
Can you imagine campaigning in a state as big as Montana and the whole state is your district?
Well, you have to do extraordinary things to get coverage. And he figured out he broke that mold or broke that nut.
A reporter from The Guardian, not the first to ask questions this candidate did not like, asked him about how he would vote now that the score is in on the new health care bill. He said, well, I'm not sure. He said, well, we need to know sooner than later. The guy said, I'll tell you later. He said, yeah, but we kind of would like to know now.
Well, I mean, the election's today.
So could you just tell us what election is today? Today's the day of the election?
Yeah.
In Montana?
Right. So for him, the candidate, to say, I'll
let you know later.
Talk to me later. It's like, well, no, they're voting in 12 hours.
What I don't understand is what set this guy off. And again, he'd had coverage that he didn't like from this paper before. And I suppose if you're a guy running for Congress in Montana, you don't need any British newspaper, U.S. lackey reporter, who's a liberal, by the way, coming around asking you questions.
We don't know that he's a liberal.
He called him a liberal. His
team
said, well, besides this liberal reporters coming around.
He said the liberal media, as if it was okay then.
That is what the editorial said, and we'll talk to the guy that wrote it in the next hour. But they said, what is the upshot of that?
You want to know, I think?
Sure.
I think that they think, and maybe we are in such a place, that if you just blame the quote-unquote liberal media, that you can get away with it. I mean, that statement that he issued completely is rejected or disagreed with by the actual witnesses in the room.
Four of whom were reporters for Fox News.
Yeah.
A reporter, a photographer. I'll give you the team of people. It says
it was a Fox affiliate, right? Like Channel 32.
Oh, okay.
Fox,
so not Fox News. I'll just read to you from MSN today. Fox News reporter. So it could have been a local affiliate. But this says Fox News reporter Alicia Acuna. Do you know who Alicia Acuna is?
I don't know.
Field producer Faith Mangan and photographer Keith Rayleigh. That doesn't sound like a local outlet to me. Witnessed the incident, according to an account published by FoxNews.com. After Jacobs asked, is it Gianforte?
Yeah.
His question, Jacobs is the reporter, Acuna wrote, that's the Fox News reporter, Gianforte grabbed Jacobs by the neck with both hands, it's not funny, and slammed him into the ground. And the reporter was smart enough, evidently realizing that this wasn't being videotaped, to do play-by-play of the assault so that it would be that much better for him or worse for the candidate.
Well, that's your assumption, right? I mean,
I don't know, really. When you're somebody knocks you to the ground, both hands around your throat, breaks your glasses, and tussles you up, are you saying, "Hey, you're body slamming me, and now I believe you're hitting me"? What does that mean for the permanent record?
Maybe not the body slamming. Okay, I'll give you that one. But I just love the poor guy, like the lilt in his voice. You've been in that situation where he's like, "You guys want to give me your names?" You know, just be. He clearly was knocked aside by it.
Yeah, right.
Both emotionally and physically.
Right. So he clearly had his senses about knocked out of him. Here, I'll click on to the part I think that you're talking
about.
Get
the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hot up here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Can I get you guys' names? Please.
But
pen is mightier than the sword, though. I mean, so I don't know if this guy's a 98-pound weakling or if he's a weightlifter, but can I get you guys' names is right. That's all you need.
Well, he was getting them for the police report,
sure,
I think.
Sure he is. Yeah. But my point is, and he can write about it and report about it, and in the back of his mind, he must think, wow, I just changed the election. I just tipped this guy.
I don't think he did. I think the Republican will win today.
Yeah, because why?
70% of the vote is already in.
Isn't that amazing?
Early voting.
Yeah. 70% of the vote is in early voting. And by the way, Montana, in other states that allow early voting, I suspect almost all of the states do now, but most of the states allow you to rescind your vote. Did you know that?
Yeah, I have heard about that.
Montana doesn't allow it. Uh-huh. So now they're saying we need to... So now we got to like reconnoiter on how do we handle early voting in Montana.
Well, I'm all about making it easier to vote, and early voting makes it a lot easier to vote. But this is an argument against early voting.
Or it's an argument against not allowing people to change the vote after the fact.
Can you imagine the nightmare, though, of this event, tens of thousands of people wanted to switch their vote? That'd be very... I guess you would have to go... Because here in Illinois, I think, right, you can go to the polling place on Election Day and say, I want to vote in person instead of my write-in.
Yeah, right.
Mail-in. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think that's the way it works here.
Three of the major papers there, I mean, you know, the big cities that you can think of, Billings and Bozeman, they have rescinded their endorsement of this guy, not because his policy changed, not because they only now discovered he's a bit of a hothead, but because he assaulted a reporter and because of the way his campaign team handled it.
Think of it, if we have a sitting member of Congress who was charged with beating a reporter. Think of that.
Well, okay, fine. You know, we don't have video of this. Do you remember the Corey Lewandowski story on the floor?
Yes.
I never thought that reporter had a case. I think the quote-unquote, we use the word assault to describe what Corey Lewandowski did to a reporter on the floor of, it wouldn't have been the Republican National Convention, was it?
No, I think it was a rally.
It was a rally.
Right.
And I always thought that story showed nothing but bias. There was no assault. He didn't want somebody to get in the way of the candidate, and he moved him out of the way. Her out of the way.
I don't care about that. I don't give a care. I don't remember that one so much. I think you're probably right. This guy's charged with assault. And there are witnesses saying that he put two hands around a guy's neck.
Okay.
The guy went to a hospital to get medical treatment.
I think he was smart to do that.
I think he was probably sent there by police.
I think he was sent there by, this is the best way for this story to go.
You're this close to thinking he orchestrated this. I don't know where you're getting that.
I think that what he was, I understand what badgering is all about. I understand that some reporters like to get in the face of some candidates.
Okay.
You have to hear me out on this because you know where my politics are, and I think you know where my head is on stories like this.
Yep, I do.
But I think that the media is gleeful right now in looking for surrogates of Donald Trump, and if we can bust them or pop them or make him or them look bad, we do. And I think that's an undercurrent to a lot of the reporting that is going on. So when I see this story unfold, in the back of my mind, I'm just saying, okay, where's the video? How bad is the assault? I don't have that. And here's the thing, Steve. If as a candidate, say it's the day before the election and I just tense and here's this stupid Guardian reporter again and I don't want to deal with this guy.
Yeah.
And I push him out of the way.
Right.
Should that cost me the election?
Yeah. Because, good golly, if you can't take a question repeated by a reporter in a friendly office and you're going to resort to violence and a crime there, what are you going to do when something's hard?
There's not going to be time. I'm just curious.
Okay, speak right with now. Shane, please.
But you don't.
Okay, I'll stop that.
He didn't orchestrate falling to the ground under the guy, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Okay, but all right. And you used to, let me one other thing. You said badgered. There's no evidence of badgering. We have on audio.
You're right about that.
I often will repeat a question if they don't ask it.
CBO score, because you know you were waiting to make your decision about health care until you saw the bill and it just came out. And what you thought
we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
to speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
And then he just unloads on him.
Yeah, he sounded really aggressive.
I told Elif, I said, Elif, give me more, because everybody's just playing the get the hell out, boom, boom, boom. But when you listen to the audio that leads up to it, it is a thoroughly reasonable question asked in a thoroughly reasonable way.
And the candidate, understandably, didn't want to answer it on the eve of the election. Why would you avoid that one? That's a hard one. But the reporter's
listen
not
to you.
What?
What? Well, the candidate understandably doesn't want to answer that because that's a hard one?
Yeah, if I'm the candidate, I'm like, you know what? Ask my buddy. We'll talk about this tomorrow. And so the reporter pressed him and said, no, you need to ask now.
Okay, but I'll be you in this scene. But the candidate has an obligation to answer the hard one because that's the job.
Oh, no, I'm with you. I'm saying at the first reaction of the candidate, I can see why he's trying to put it off. It's in his interest to not answer it. So it's also in the reporter's interest to follow it up and insist, no, this is a significant question with a significant deadline. You need to answer the question. I'm not defending the candidate at all. I'm just saying I don't know why he wouldn't want to answer that question.
The editor of the Billings Gazette is going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour. And in their editorial today, which is about as well a written piece of editorial writing as I've read in a long time, and I read an editorial about every day, they wrote, the Gianforte campaign should be appalled by its statement that would seem to justify the fight when it said the Bozeman Republican had tussled with a, quote, liberal journalist. How would the campaign have known the reporter's political beliefs? And is it suggesting that it is acceptable to put your hands on a reporter if you believe their political views are different from yours? They really doubled down on the stupid on this one, didn't they?
It's absolutely offensive. Me. And what they're really saying is, hey, you Montanans, we're beating up on the enemy, so it's okay.
Well, that's it. I mean, we do have a president that has said that the American press is the enemy of the American people. And that wasn't the president on the campaign trail. That was the duly elected president of the United States on the 100th night of his term. Saying that the press is the enemy of the people. He said it multiple times. If he didn't say it on the 100th night at that big speech in Pennsylvania, I'm wrong. But he has said it since he was elected, and I think he said it that night, that the press is the enemy of the people. And so if the president of the United States is saying that, you just wonder then what sort of license does that give any candidate or anybody who doesn't like what the press is saying or doing? So I'm understanding where the hostility is coming here. That is, I understand the magnitude of the story. But I'm also struggling to keep it in perspective because I don't have video and I have descriptions of something that are coming from people who I think would love to see the president go down, which is the mainstream media. It's 1:23. I'll pick up some phone lines in a minute. The number is 312-981-7200. This is WGN. The Hall of Fame ceremony was earlier today. You may have heard it here on WGN Radio, hosted by one Steve Bertrand. Wendy was there, too. And it was nice to see and hear the both of you on the stage. What a lovely reunion that was, not only of our on-air and off-air staffs, producers. It was just amazing how many people showed up. Some names you'd recognize, some you would not, and many, many listeners, too. It was really well done, Steve, and it was a pleasure to, this is the first time I've been able to be at one of these things, be in the crowd. Well done. That was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, but it's just a great event. It's like it's a homecoming.
And Judy Pilak, it was so nice to see all those people. It was so nice to see how good they all looked. And it was so nice to see Judy for once have a stage, because Judy Pilak seldom gets a chance to talk or be the queen of the prom. Tell you what.
Today was her special day.
She showed up today in the most gorgeous, regal, queen-like blue gown. I said, Judy, is that a tiara in your head? She goes, yeah, yeah. She looked fantastic. They all did. And it was fun to listen to. A couple of your calls here before Steve does the news. Steve is on line one. You're on WGN. Hi, Steve. What can we do for you?
How you doing, John? The problem I have with this whole situation is that, and I believe the reporter, because when he said, you just body slammed me, you're just you know, the congressman didn't say, no, I didn't. What are you talking about?
That's true.
I think what happened is that we have an environment now, and especially in more right-leaning states, such as Montana, where I don't think Congress, senators, people of any type of power feel that they're going to have to face any type of consequences because of rhetoric that the president has been spreading of fake media or terrible reporters or liars or all these things. Instead of a president that we have who should want to face the American people and give them the answers that we deserve, we have a president who wants to hide and continue blaming everybody else for asking the good questions, for asking the relevant questions.
Yeah.
And again, this reporter was only doing his job, and this congressman, to do what he did, should have the guts to resign, to say, you know what, I made a mistake, I am not worthy to serve Montanans, and get out.
Yeah, no, I get your point. And what he would do would then be resign his candidacy, because the sitting congressman has now got a position in the Trump administration. This is an open seat. But a lot of people think it's going to go to the man who did the shoving. And it'll be interesting to see then if, I'll finish the sentence, but I think we know how this is going to go. Say he wins, if he would, as Steve suggests, resign just out of decorum. But I don't think that's going to happen.
In a weird way, if the Republicans win, the Republicans are better off if they lose in a twisted way. Because if they win, this is going to keep going.
Right.
Ryan, can you see the guy who's assaulted a reporter, someone representing the free press?
Yeah, but a lot of people see this as they did the previous special election. What state was that? It wasn't Colorado. What was the last state that had a special election?
Kansas, I think.
Was it Kansas? As, you know, sort of a representation of Donald Trump and the administration. Does this tell you something? I don't suppose the Republicans want to lose it for that reason. But, yeah, they don't want this guy on their side. That's a problem, too. One last call here. Dave, jump in there. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Your voice at all. Our friend Donald loves to read on Hitler's speeches and also quote Hitler. One of his quotes is the one that you just gave. And that is that he said, the press is the enemy of the people. Hitler said the same thing. So we have a dictator who is trying to emulate. I agree with the last caller. The man should just step aside and resign, but he's not going to do that because, it's just the way it is. Most of the votes, as Steve mentioned, are already in. Two-thirds of the votes, at least a third, if not more.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for the phone call. It's more than a third.
The number I heard this morning was 70.
70%. But I also heard, think about this, though, because I heard that the polling was showing that they were still a single digit apart.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 or 8%.
I think they range from 2 to 8%. Montana is an interesting story because it is a red state, but they do elect statewide Democrats. I think they currently have a statewide senator who's a Democrat. They've elected Democratic governors.
What if the vast majority of the outstanding 25% now go with the cowboy?
Well, I'm sure he could win the Democrat.
Yeah,
but it's got to be an overwhelming majority
of the remaining 25%.
Right.
To take care of the previous 75%. Yeah. We'll let you know how it goes. You know, we spent a lot of the first part of the show today talking about what happened in Montana, the election that's taking place today, and the candidate pushing the reporter, assaulting him, a editorial writer. In fact, it's the publisher. No, it's the editor-in-chief of one of the newspapers. The Billings Gazette is going to join us after 2 o'clock to talk about what happened and what is happening there today. I want to catch up on a different story right now. Stacy St. Clair joins us back in the WGN Radio All-State Showcase Studios. Her story now, still about the Naperville teen who committed suicide in January, is about the lawsuit which the family is filing. We had a remarkable conversation with her on Monday after, was it the Sunday story?
It was Tuesday.
No, it was Tuesday and Monday.
Tuesday's paper, yeah.
Yeah. And the phone lines lit up and people were talking to us about it. Obviously, you struck a nerve. Can you tell me anything about the reaction to the story that you wrote?
From just my perspective of stories that I wrote, I have never had a bigger reaction in the emails that I'm getting from readers all over the country talking about it. And it is among the top read stories in the history of ChicagoTribune.com in just 48 hours. So there's been this incredible interest in this story.
It is the story of...
It is the story of Corey Walgren, a 16-year-old Naperville North junior who was in January called into the dean's office on a disciplinary matter involving a possible, not a possible, a recording in which there was audio of a consensual sexual encounter that he had had. And he was called in to meet with the dean and the police and met with them alone for 18 minutes. And then they called his parents, and his mother said on the phone the school talked about it being a child pornography investigation and that Corey could end up on the sex offender registry. And then his mom said, I'll be right there. I'm going to leave work right now and get over there. And in the meantime, they left Corey alone to sit and wait for his mother. He walked out of school and walked about a little less than a mile into downtown Naperville and took his own life from the top of a parking deck.
We don't know exactly how, but he was on the top of a parking deck, and 50 feet below was the surface, and he landed there.
Right.
The family is suing for a minimum of $5 million.
Yeah, they filed a lawsuit yesterday in DuPage Circuit Court against Naperville School District 203 and the Naperville Police Department and the individual police officer and deans who were involved in the discussion.
This story is a few months old, if you will, though mm-hmm. It appears as though you're the first one to really put pen to paper and tell us more comprehensively about it. But people in Naperville have been talking about this story.
And I'm a Naperville resident, so...
You were hearing it, too.
Yeah, and I was hearing a lot of misinformation.
That's why I bring it up this way, mm-hmm. Stacey. So maybe clarify some of the myth or the rumors or the falsehoods. What was said that wasn't true, or what is true about this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too much into repeating bad information because it sort of sticks out in the ether that way, but... The original story I heard, that the accusation, not that what Corey was questioned about isn't serious and isn't, serious for the girl who reported it, but the first allegation I heard that it was just far more serious than that.
But I also thought, you and I have talked about this on and off the air, and in fact today when I was visiting with a bunch of friends, mm-hmm. the conversation came up again about your story and about mm-hmm. the interrogation that the police and the dean gave this young man for 18 minutes before they called his parents. And is that really the nut of this? Is how intense was that interrogation? Or is it the simple fact that his parents weren't in the room, that they should not have had 18 seconds of conversation with him without his mom there?
I think the Walgren family lawyers would say there shouldn't have been even 18 seconds of conversation. State law states unless there's, a dire emergency or you fear that evidence is going to be compromised, you have to notify the parents.
That conversation could have waited the next day.
Yeah, well, and certainly, when they called Mrs. Walgren, her response was, I'm leaving work right now and I will be there. She told him 50 minutes. She got 5-0. She got there in 35.
By that time, he'd wandered off campus. How is it that then, having leveled a charge like that against the kid or mm-hmm. talked to him about these mm-hmm. things, he's not more supervised? Doesn't anybody think that's a challenge for a 16-year-old boy and he can wander off campus?
I think from the response I've been getting from readers, I think that is more so than even the parent notification. They keep asking me, how could someone have left him alone after you do use, his mother says they use terms like child pornography, and their police reports show that they use terms like child pornography. His mother said they, threatened the sex offender registry, which I would imagine, I'm not in Corey's head, but I have to imagine if I was 16 years old and somebody said that to me, I would have been terrified.
My life is over.
Yeah, that's how I would have felt. So that's the question we get a lot. Like, how could you,
$5 million. Who's the suit against? The school?
The school district, 203.
Right. So then what does that mean? You literally, the school district would, if they win a case like this, pay $5 million to the family?
Yeah, well, the jury would decide, how much. But, yeah, that's sort of the number the lawyers put in as, the starting point for juries. Ask for an excess of
that. Is there any
number.
History for this sort of thing? Is this sort of a reasonable pursuit?
I think when, dollar amount aside, because I really don't know how lawyers come up with the numbers they come up with, but I think in a lot of times in civil cases, and it's taken me a long time to get to this point, but I think – a lot of times in civil cases, you sue for the next kid down the line who you try to prevent this for, and not so much for your own. And I, in talking to the Walgreens, they want changes.
His father said as much. Nobody should have to go through this.
Right.
Let's not. And this gets the attention of all the school districts in the world.
Right.
$5 million.
Right. I've heard from so many school administrators.
Really?
Who say, we forwarded your story to, you know, our staff. And I heard from a West Suburban police commander who said, I've sent this to my department, entire department, reminding them of what the law and our department procedures are.
So let's pause for just a minute. Mm-hmm. And after a quick break, just tell me what the response from the school district is. What happens next?
Okay.
It's 1:50. Stacey St. Clair's second story on this topic family is headlined online today. Family of Naperville teen who committed suicide sues school police. We continue to follow this story here on WGN. Daryl Ehrlich is the editor of the Billings Gazette. Gosh, John, why would you talk to the editor of a newspaper in Montana today after 2 o'clock? Stacey St. Clair, a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, is in our studio. She's following up on the story of the Naperville teen who committed suicide in January after having a discussion without his parents at the school. He had what they described as child pornography on his phone. It was a recording of him and another 16-year-old girl having consensual sex, they say. Now the family is suing the police and the school district. The lawsuit, you wrote, seeks more than $5 million. Is the school district pushing back? Is the police pushing back?
Yeah, they both are. They both have issued statements acknowledging that this is a tragedy and that, you know, the Naperville community is hurting from this, but that they believe that they have followed all their procedures and policies and that it was handled properly.
So this is this isn't going to be settled?
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that right now they're in the position of defending their practice.
This texter writes, has anyone spoken to the young woman who was recorded? What about her right to privacy?
She, the Walgren family has repeatedly said that she's not to blame for anything that happened, that they are concerned about her well-being as well. She was welcomed and attended Corey's wake. So I think there is a lot of concern on the Walgren family side for her and support for her.
Will you be reporting on their family? Will we ever? I suppose some people in Naperville know who this girl is and this family mm-hmm. is. I sure don't need to know mm-hmm. anything about them. What is your attitude about going down that road as a reporter?
My attitude is if she wanted to speak, if her family, her parents gave her, she's 16, so if her parents gave her permission to speak with me, I would welcome that. I've tried to, as much as I could, sort of minimize her involvement in the story, with not to sound callous, but I agree with the Walgreens. She's not to blame for anything. So this is about what happened when at 1 o'clock on January 11th, adults took Corey Walgren into a room. It's not what happened between he and this girl. It's what how adults behaved and what their decisions were.
What's the next timeline item then?
I think it just goes into the long, slow legal process. It doesn't sound like the school or the police department are looking to change their practices or their policies after this.
Oh, but the school district must know that if nothing, I'm sure they don't want to admit that they did anything wrong, especially now.
Right.
But you got to have the parent in that room.
I agree with you. They are admitting that they are they're not acknowledging they did anything wrong. But I have to imagine that if this scenario repeats again at the school, I betcha parents are called, and I wouldn't be surprised if students aren't left alone either afterwards.
And isn't no kidding. Excellent point. And isn't it also possibly true, Stacey, that if the mother or father had been in the room and they had the conversation with them there, and the conversation was the same as was without them, mm-hmm. that the young man would not have been guilty of any crime?
According to if you read the police reports, they never intended to charge Corey with any crime. They were going to do what was called a station adjustment, which is when you go down to the station with your parents, and in this case, probably he'd have to sign a contract agreeing to some kind of something, whether it be community service or classes or whatever, and they'd all agree on it. And so that's, I think that's one of the most tragic things about all of this. So maybe if like cooler heads had prevailed, or even not that, just a calmer situation existed, a more that that would have been clearer to Corey.
Thanks for continuing to tell us the story, Stacey. Let's visit again.
Anytime.
First time Stacey and I sat down and had a series of conversations, it was when Rod Blagojevich was
yes.
in jail.
Yes.
And what do you make, by the way, real quick, of his petition to get out early? He's still pursuing that.
He's never going to give up. And
I wouldn't.
I'm awaiting his petition for the presidential pardon. You know, it's his old boss from The Apprentice. And I think... I think President Trump has shown he loves to sort of stick it to Chicago, so and to Obama. So
okay, 1 to 100. 100, it happens. 0, it doesn't. What's the probability of that scenario? Donald Trump pardons Rod Blagojevich or commutes his sentence.
1 out of 100.
Yeah,
6. But I'm still giving it a chance.
Nice to see you.
Thanks, nice to
Stacey.
See you.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Sun is shining downtown Chicago. Skies are blue. Ryan Burrow said earlier today,
Lord have mercy.
That thing in the sky is the sun. Lord have mercy. John Williams all the way till 3 o'clock. Afterwards, I'll be John Williams still, but I won't be on the radio here. So thanks for tuning in now all the way until 3. By the way, at this time tomorrow, we'll be almost ready for the bright side. Remember that little thing we used to do on the radio where you called in, said some good news in your world, why you are smiling, and we all smile together? We call it the bright side, and it's back. And we'll do it tomorrow at, let's advertise, 2:30 here on WGN.
The CBO score, because you know you were waiting to make your decision about health care until you saw the bill and it just came out. And what
we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
to speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
Okay, after our conversation earlier, this version of it doesn't seem appropriate, Steve. You chastise me for not appreciating sufficiently the magnitude of this story.
Okay. Right.
Well, I can't strip the music out, so if you don't mind.
Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You and Corey.
Yes.
You last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you
got it. He just body slammed me.
That's the audio heard round the world. Ben Jacobs, a Guardian political reporter, was asking Greg Gianforte, a tech millionaire, running for the seat vacated by Ryan Zink, about the Republican health care plan. Steve? Fox News. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say Zink is the new Interior Secretary.
So he vacates his congressional seat, and that is the special election, which is taking place today in Montana. And after the candidate evidently didn't like the question or the questioner, he body slammed him to the ground. So is this going to be a game changer? Daryl Ehrlich is on a phone line. It was his paper, among a couple of others, which actually rescinded their endorsement of the candidate. Daryl, this is John, and you're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
How is it going there today? Are there any, I don't know, early returns or exit polling, anything that's saying if this story is going to change the outcome of the election?
We knew that about 50% of the voters had already voted mail, and in Montana, you cannot change your vote. We are one of the states that does not allow you to change your vote. So we knew it was going to be tight. So if it was already tight going into it, then with this kind of bombshell of a story, this could be a definite game changer. We do not know how. We have had reporters out at polls all day, and you know what we're hearing is actually a little shocking. We've heard people say, "Yeah, we've seen the news, but we're Republican, so we're still voting." So I think it's still he was the 24 hours ago he was the favorite slightly, and I'd like to know more about how that is changing. But from what we talk when we're talking to voters, it doesn't seem to be affecting them much.
Well, you know what happens. Sometimes the Republicans will still vote for the Republican candidate. The Democrats will still vote for their aggrieved candidate. But maybe it turns out more people from the other side. Maybe the question is this getting more Democrats to the polls?
Yeah, we don't know that. It'd be interesting to see how many people are also just sitting the race out. You know, just saying, I'm just not going to participate. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see overall turnout. And then, you know, if the Libertarian candidate, who doesn't get a lot of play, but has the Libertarians have played an interesting foil in Montana federal elections. So that could certainly any support that a Libertarian draws away from a Republican is going to mean bad things for the Republican, Gianforte.
Gosh, this does sound like a conversation I've had before, doesn't it to you, Daryl? A candidate unpopular, particularly right towards the time that you get to vote, but people can't stand the other candidate, and maybe the third candidate pulls off some votes and it's very close. Have you ever heard of a story like this before,
yeah.
Daryl?
I've heard of it a lot. In fact, our senior senator in Montana won in very much the same fashion. Then, obviously, the national election of President Trump. We certainly saw the disdain for both candidates, and you're seeing some of that. There is a deep frustration in Montana with both the Democrats and the Republicans, and we said as much in our original endorsement. Before we rescinded it, we said that we were deeply disappointed with both choices.
Why did you go ahead, Steve Bertrand?
I was going to say, so what happens if he wins and he is convicted in one way or another of assaulting a reporter?
Yeah, we're still trying to work through. Of course, it's a misdemeanor, not a felony. It is punishable up into jail time, but the likelihood of that is in. And even a place like Bozeman, Montana, is unlikely. But we've questioned what's going to happen with the investigation committees on ethics when you get to the House, and just how much stroke will a guy who's kind of got this cloud have if he is elected? And the other thing is, I think most Montanans, we love the image of cowboy boots and cowboy hats and rugged and all the things that, but this is not who we are. This is not representative. And I think a lot of us are disappointed. I was here when I was born and raised here. We had the Freeman, we had the Unabomber, and in Montana, it was stung by those perceptions. And so this is most Montanans don't like being in the spotlight for this reason.
I thought your editorial in the paper where you rescinded the Billings Gazette editorial where you rescinded your endorsement was just so well written. Were those your words, Daryl?
They were. I was speaking on behalf of the editorial board, but it was editorial deadline writing.
You wrote, "We are at a loss for words." That doesn't happen often. What happens even less, hopefully never again, is a Montana candidate assaulting a reporter. That's why the Billings Gazette editorial board is also doing something without precedent. We're rescinding our editorial endorsement of Greg Gianforte. To make this an issue of media intrusion or even a passionate defense of the role of a free press during an election would be to miss the point, you wrote in part. You said, if what was heard on the tape and described by eyewitnesses is accurate, the incident in Bozeman is nothing short of assault. We previously supported Gianforte because he said he was ready to listen, to compromise, to take the tough questions. Everything he said was obliterated by his surprising actions that were recorded and witnessed Wednesday. We simply cannot trust him because trust, not agreement, is essential in the role of representatives. We cannot stand by him. While we clearly made a poor choice in our original endorsement, an even bigger mistake would have been to stand by it. And that's an interesting point. I mean, we think, well, who do you agree with? Are you a Republican paper? Are you Republicans? Then you stand by the Republican. And you say that's not the essence of representative government. It's trust. You have to be able to trust the judgment of these people.
Yeah, absolutely. And we understand that, you know, I think as reporters, there are nuances in that they're not easily – a lot of these issues that are at the federal level or even the state and sometimes local level are not just easily defined. There's nuances and there's complexities. And so we have to trust that our elected representatives at all levels are handling those and kind of teasing those out and thinking deeply about them. Uh, this, this just, how can you trust a person who you are listening to him being questioned and then it goes from zero to 100 and it's...
about that. Okay, cover me, Steve Bertrand. So can you just describe for us a little bit about what happened there? And was there any history between this candidate and either this reporter or this newspaper?
Well, we don't know a whole lot. This is a national. One of the interesting things is Montana doesn't usually get a lot of national play. We have three electoral votes, so in a presidential election, we're small. We may get a visit or two, but that's kind of just... That's just on a whistle stop usually. So Montana, because of this special election, because of the national climate, and this is kind of becoming a referendum on the Trump administration, which Montanans supported Trump by 20 points. So this was being seen on a national stage as much larger than Montana's one. We have one house in or one seat in the U.S. House. So this was so it's attracted, of course, the national media. New York Times, Washington Post.
And a lot of money, $17 million.
Which is not really precedented in Montana, not that we, but per capita, we don't have that kind of spending. The interesting thing about that is the Guardian reporter, so I don't know Mr. Jacobs. I'm deeply sorry that that was his experience in Montana. That's not representative. But we know that the Guardian had asked Gianforte and had broken the story about Gianforte having what it called ties to Russia business. It what really turned out that Gianforte had some mutual funds that had Russian stock in them. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, so he's got his financial disclosures are 114 pages long, and one of them said that he had stock in a Russian company. And I think Mr. Gianforte, and we reported as much, as that didn't necessarily mean that he had ties. So I would suspect that the Gianforte camp did not like that characterization.
That was in previous reporting. Yeah, go ahead.
That was previous reporting. So there was history. To your question, was there history? But we don't really have anything that would – I mean, he was asking questions and he was deflecting – Mr. Gianforte was asking questions and deflecting them, and then you heard what you heard on the audio.
He was asking questions about the health care bill, which is thoroughly reasonable on the eve of the election.
Yeah, especially after the CBO had just come out with the score. I mean, I think that's right. What his question seemed absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
I would be proud if it were my reporter asking that.
So as a guy who sends reporters out in the field to cover politicians or crashes or accidents or anything else, are you, A, bothered by the statement from the candidate that basically it was okay because it was the liberal media, and, two, worried that that might spread to others and that your reporters might be a little more at risk out there in Montana?
I'm not sure that I'm I would like to hope that I'm not more worried about this, that this is an aberration and it's getting widespread attention as such. And I would hope that I'm always worried when I send reporters out to ask people who are into emotionally charged or even dangerous situations. That's something that weighs as a reporter myself and as an editor, that's something that concerns me. I don't know that this makes me necessarily more concerned. But I do. I was very, very shocked by the Gianfortes, and we brought it out in the editorial.
Yeah.
To say, well, we did this or this happened because it was a liberal reporter or liberal. How would they know what Mr. Jacobs?
Well, can I just read from the statement? So this is the campaign. Jacob. This is the campaign after the fact putting this statement out. Jacobs was asked to leave. The statement reads. After asking Jacobs to lower the recorder, Jacobs declined. Greg then attempted to grab the phone that was being pushed in his face. Jacobs grabbed Greg's wrist and spun away from Greg, pushing them both to the ground. It is unfortunate that this aggressive behavior from a liberal journalist created this scene at our campaign volunteer barbecue. That's the statement from the campaign.
Yeah. And the other thing that's important to note about that statement, and it was corroborated by the TV crew, the Fox TV crew that was there, that statement does not square with what was recorded and what was witnessed.
I mean, it's amazing to me that because there were witnesses in the room, there were witnesses in the next room, and the statement seems to be completely made up and then also done in a way to sort of deem – that's what I was questioning about the reporters, because the way they wrote the statement, it implies to me that with a wink and a nod, they can get away with it with their population. That seems to be what they're saying. Hey, you guys, these are just the liberal media. We know what that means.
Well, it fits in. It fits in well with the narrative of fake news, failing media, liberal conspiracy. And, you know, the president's advisors have even called us the enemy. And, you know, what I've said before, and we've said this editorial, and I feel this very strongly, that when you start using the language that's enemies of the people, you start using something that is coming close to giving cover to action. Because if they're your enemy, they can do, you can do harm, you're allowed to do harm to your enemy. And so I think, I don't know that's what was going on in Mr. Gianforte's mind. I can't explain what I heard on the tape, quite frankly. But it scares me, the rhetoric, because I think words tip you off to a state of mind or how we treat each other. And so that's probably what's more disconcerting.
Last question for Daryl Ehrlich, editor of the Billings Gazette. They pulled their endorsement of Montana congressional candidate Greg Gianforte. What are you hearing from your readers or his voters?
We're hearing both from both sides. There are many. I would say the majority of comments have been positive, saying thank you for doing that. We appreciate it. There, of course, have been some who said you should have never done this in the first place. You know, we hold you. You know, you've lost credibility. Now you're wishy-washy. You should have never done this. And, of course, we have some people, if you get on our social media, if you see what people are commenting, they've been talking a lot about, well, you know, I finally someone standing up to the reporters. So it's been mixed. But I would say overall, people have been very supportive.
Daryl, the editorial you guys wrote was terrific. Keep fighting the good fight. And by that, I mean journalism. And thanks for joining us this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
So Lou Manfredini came up to me today at the post Walk of Fame reception that we had. I love that when WGN Radio has a reception sometimes afterwards, booze is served. You know, it's 11 in the morning. People are having a glass of wine and beer and bubbly. I thought that was really fun. I didn't have any, but I mean, if, you know, it was part of your work day and you could budget it in, I think that's part of the celebration. I guess the point is we're not so buttoned up and straight-laced that you can't have a Chardonnay in the middle of the afternoon during a celebration. And I've worked places where you can't. But don't worry, I'm fine. I've moved past that. It's 2:41 now. Last question or comment about the guest in the conversation we just had. We visited with a reporter or editorial writer, actually the editor of a newspaper in Billings, about the election out there today and the body slam that guy took. Is that what this caller is about? It's Bob on line one. Hey, Bob, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, he brought up a great point. You know, he was saying how concerned he was about the rhetoric that was being used, because it gives the enemy an opportunity to do harm and everything else. But you know what? That's exactly what President Trump has been complaining about with the press, the fake news and everything else. How many times have you read an article in the newspaper or on the internet and the headlines was not even close to representing the story? And I did it just the other day with the American Airlines story about the black lady who was sent to the back of the airplane. You know, right away you think racism. It had nothing to do with racism. When Trump does it to the press gets pissed. When the press does it to Trump, it's okay. Both sides are being so ridiculously childish. They both need to grow up. It's that simple.
Would you say that one side's more guilty of that right now than another?
Honestly, no, I don't. No question, Trump's being a whiner, okay? I can't say enough about that. I really can't. It drives me crazy with all the tweets and everything else.
Yeah.
But the press, and only because there's so many different outlets to get your news from. It's not just the television or the newspaper. I mean, how many thousands and thousands of internet outlets that there are that can print, quote-unquote, fake news because of the headline?
I don't even know what fake news is. I don't know what fake news is. Is fake news news that's wrong, or is fake news news that is intentionally wrong? And if it's news that's intentionally wrong, then I think you'd be hard-pressed to make your case. If it's news that's sometimes wrong or a little misleading, I think that that's an honest mistake that human beings make. And I'd be more concerned if you could prove a motive. And I don't think you can.
And I don't disagree with that. But what about the headline that doesn't represent the story?
Yeah, then it's about it. Well, first of all, reporters don't write the headlines, but they all work for the newspaper.
Agreed.
And the newspaper is what matters. So I don't know the exact story or headline you're talking about, but if it misrepresented it or if it oversold the salaciousness of the race angle, then shame on them. They shouldn't do that. But I will say this, and you must not agree. I think the media has tried to be as fair as they can with Donald Trump. The problem is he said a lot of stupid things, he's told a lot of lies, and he's made a lot of mistakes. And when they honestly and accurately report that, that looks bad. But that's not mean or unfair. And it's not fake. And the president calls that fake news. So if you want to tell me that you are tired of fake news, you better have a definition of it, because I don't know what that is.
No, and I told you what my definition of it is when they misrepresent the stories and say that, you know, like, and I'll go back to this internet story that it had everything to do with these two ladies that were flying coach, were upgraded inadvertently to first class. When they found out that they were short one first-class ticket,
yeah,
they kept the very first ticket, and they said, you can stay, the second ticket, you need to go to the first available seat, which just happened to be on the back of the airplane. And guess what?
Yeah.
One lady was white, one lady was black. It was just the way it happened.
Yeah.
You know, but that happens all the time.
Okay, but thank you for the phone call. I'm out of time here, and I'm glad you joined us. Bob, listen, I don't mind people every now and then pointing out to us that we all need to be as good at this as we can be. And in this case, maybe you've got a point there. But I think when we are going to adopt the president's notion that everything we don't like is fake news, then you have to have a definition, and you'd better be pretty good on the specifics and the motives, because that's really what he's implying. And I don't think he has evidence of it as often as he drops the word fake and news on us. Different topic now. It's 2:45. Woman is pushing her son. Did you see the video, Steve, of the woman who pushes her son across the graduation stage?
I only heard you and Lou talking about it today.
Lou sent me the story yesterday, and he said, oh, you've got to talk about this. In fact, we will try and visit with the mom this week. Tomorrow's Friday. If not tomorrow, maybe Monday. This story will always be a good story to retell. But it's nice because of just the way the audio plays out. This young man, about 5 years ago, fell down a flight of stairs. He was an athlete. He was a good student. He's a good-looking kid. And he falls down a flight of stairs, compresses two of his vertebrae, and is now quadriplegic. And that's the rest of his life. He's in a wheelchair, and he can't move his limbs. He decides after rehabilitation, you know, doing what you can, that he wants to pursue his education. He's still going to get that damn college degree. And he's going to get his MBA. He goes to college at a place called Chapman University in California. And his mother, who I don't believe lived at the time that he was going to school there, decides, I can't let him try and do this alone. I got to help my son. She moves from Florida to California. And she goes to every single class with him for 2 years and takes his notes. I don't know if the university would have provided that or not, but the mom did. She took his notes and went to class with him and then helped him study. She was his mentor or tutor for 2 years. And son of a gun, if that young man doesn't pass the tests and get his degree. And so there they are at the graduation ceremony, and the mom is pushing him across the stage.
The administration and the Board of Trustees have decided to honor with an honorary MBA degree.
They give a degree to the mom. The mom gets a degree. Honorary. She didn't know.
Mrs. Judith O'Connor has attended all the classes with her son, Marty, who just received his MBA. She has taken notes and worked with Marty throughout his academic career. Oh, shoot.
And that's it. That's the end of the story. She can't talk anymore. That's all you need to know.
Oh, that is so sweet.
Oh, shoot. I've had those oh, shoot moments. I'm of an age now and of a mindset now where things set me off and I can feel it coming and I try and muscle through it and you can't. And sometimes you don't need to. So good on you, Mom. Good on you, son. And good on you, Chapman University, that said, hey, this is a sweet story, but we can make it even better. Let's give the mom the honorary MBA, too. She went to every class, took really good notes, and her son earns the diploma, and she's honored with one as well. Ta-da! Yeah, here's another picture of...
of what? Is it decent? Oh.
It's the picture. It's now they're photoshopping the picture of the Trumps with the Pope.
The president and the Pope.
And inserting people that weren't even there. And it just gets funnier and more inappropriate all the time.
The boy from Omen is now in the picture.
Standing there next, in between the Pope and Donald Trump. Damien is standing there.
Yeah.
Well, that Pope photo was just begging for captions.
Oh,
and
my
people
God.
Have had a lot of fun with it online.
That's why we have memes, for the purpose
this
of that
reason.
Photo alone. Park, stay, and play at Hilton Chicago Memorial Day weekend to take advantage of great accommodations and parking deals. Wave your flag at the Chicago Memorial Day Parade. Visit T-Rex's Sue's new friends at the opening of Field Museum's Jurassic World exhibit, or visit Maggie Daly Park for a round at the new mini golf course. That's huge. Plan your getaway by visiting chicago.hilton.com to book a park and stay package. You'll have over $60 in savings on accommodations and parking. Hilton Chicago's got accommodations offering families plenty of space, featuring two beds and two baths, complimentary pool, free Wi-Fi. Pack a picnic and enjoy lunch on their front yard. It's called Grant Park. Plunge into the indoor pool and soak up the city skyline. Activities are endless at a stay at Hilton Chicago. The perfect start for your summer. Visit chicago.hilton.com to book the park and stay package this Memorial Day weekend. Go to chicago.hilton.com. Some restrictions apply and blackout dates may apply. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis in the studio.
Yes, we are. And quite a day for the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, because our own Judy Pilak made the Walk of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the last time I'm going to mention that, because we spent all day yesterday talking about it, and then today, obviously, was the celebration, and now Judy is so drunk. The only reason we'll talk about it for the rest of her career, but today, I don't want to mention again because she's so drunk, she might come back and actually try to come on there. Say one more thing. How I feel about all of you.
You guys
people.
Did a half hour last night on what's going to happen to her actual star on the Walk mm-hmm. of Fame by dogs and passers.
She's going to keep it clean, John. She's not going to tolerate those who go over and dirty it up, okay?
Yeah.
So watch out.
It is unfortunate that the publicity photo they took of it did have a bird stain on it, which I thought was kind of... maybe clean it up and then take the picture again? I don't know.
It was a nice ceremony.
It really was.
Ro came up to a few of us because all the shows were there, mm-hmm. and all of us were sitting around one table having some snacks, and Ro goes, wait. Who's on the air?
That's true.
Who's driving the bus?
That's
Who's
true.
Minding the store?
Well,
right?
When I saw Steve Bertrand and John Williams standing next to each other, uh-huh. you know, spooling pasta, as Cup used to say. I'm like, what are you? Was it noon? And I'm like, one of the two of you has got to be down there.
You got to be busy right now. Yeah. Unexpected.
Playing long form records. We were playing.
And I got a DeVita.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all right. Well, you guys have a real good show and talk on the radio.